the same fear that I had when I was going to the doctors, and bearing in mind most of them were male, and they would always be like, almost the equivalent of like, it's in your head, what's going on? And I'm like, so it's that kind of feeling that you have to fight to be seen. That was also the fear as well, that people just be like dismissive, that that can't have happened. Ugh, it must have just been one of these things. So really just getting to grips with like, one, this happened, two, this is the result, and three, I can actually help people. And again, as I say, the reception around it made me go, okay, this is not about me anymore. This is like the much wider mission. Becoming dangerous is something that you acquire by going, oh, actually, every time I try something different and it works out, or I've learned something new, there's that sense of accomplishment. So you're like, okay, I'll throw myself into that again and I'll try that again. And I think that's something that stuck with me throughout.
Welcome to the Dangerous Woman podcast, hosted by me, Sophie Norris. This podcast claims the Dangerous Woman mantle one incredible, dangerous businesswoman at a time. And our Dangerous Women Collective is a community of professional women where we celebrate our achievements, support our successes, and champion our contributions to the world of work. This podcast gives a voice to those who break boundaries, from combat helicopter pilots and global CMOs to medical innovators, leaders, survivors, and creators. Every story is raw, real, and fearless. Dangerous Women share their tales of derring do to inspire and engage everyone who recognizes the power of Zig versus Zag. This collective is not anti-men. It is 100% pro-women, pro-power, pro-progress. If you are ready to stand shoulder to shoulder with women who are rewriting the rules, this is where you belong. This is what you should be listening to. Why be old when you can be dangerous? This podcast is hosted by Sophie Norris, co-founder of the Dangerous Women Collective, and is sponsored by ESET, providing next-gen digital security for home and business. We dare you to listen. Roxanne, or Roxy Pryor, is the visionary founder and CEO of Superroom, a rapidly scaling startup which sells clinical-grade organic functional mushrooms focused on boosting wellness and performance. Before Superroom, Roxy studied an undergraduate in LLB law, followed by an MSc in health management and AI. Professionally, she completed rigorous sales training within several business development roles, then moved into a successful finance career before serving as chief of staff across multiple Berlin startups. She likes to blend grit and analytical rigor with hands-on scale-up experience and cross-functional leadership, which she now channels into driving innovation within the wellness industry. However, in 2019, Roxy's copper IUD led to full-blown copper toxicity, triggering cystic acne, weight gain, panic attacks, depression, and chronic exhaustion. Despite months of doctor's visits and endless prescriptions, it was her discovery of functional mushrooms that sparked her true recovery and ultimately Superroom's mission. Roxy leads the company with a clear purpose: to empower people to proactively manage their health using clinically validated, ultra-potent functional mushroom formulas sourced from Finland's pristine forests. Her fusion of scientific knowledge, business acumen, and personal passion sets Superroom apart as a leader in wellness and longevity. Roxy was selected amongst the top 100 founders at London's largest demo day a year ago this October, and placed in the top 10 of a Dragon's Den-style first money competition, claiming the top spot for securing investment for Superroom from 9 out of the 10 dragons. No mean feat. We have talked before on this podcast about the desultory figures in funding for female-founded startups, just 2%. So Roxy not only hit on something truly transformative, but has mastered a clear narrative and knows what sells. Super dangerous. I also happen to know, since launching earlier this summer, the Superroom word is spreading, sales are strong, and the business is going from strength to strength. The power of clinical-grade functional mushrooms is out there. So enough of this up front. Roxy has a powerful story to tell, and I cannot wait to get stuck in. Welcome to the podcast, Roxy. Thank you so much for joining us. We have so much to talk about, from your own health, to the power of functional mushrooms, to founding a business, and of course, being dangerous. So we're just going to have to be really disciplined and pack it all in. So I thought we'd just start with hello, and the launch of Superroom, and how the last few months have been, because I know you have been busy.
We launched in June, actually, and it was a bit of a snowball effect that happened. We had a bit of a story there, in that one of our sort of key personas, as it were DJs, and that, you know, we call them our cultural athletes. They travel a lot. Obviously, they are very sleep deprived. They're kind of looking to move away from the traditional party stuff that you would do to sustain the energy and essentially like have a much longer career. So it was in a week of launching, and a DJ called Blondish was playing at a club called Gallery. And I had heard that she liked functional mushrooms, and I was like, okay, great. So I went down with a box and thought, somehow I'm going to get these to her. I very boldly in the club started walking around and saying, why has no one sorted this out? I don't understand. Like, she's expecting these products. She's going to need them for her set. And obviously everyone's looking at me like I'm completely confused and a little bit insane. and being bounced around and around and around. And then eventually I'd made friends with one of the guys that was managing the floor. And he was like, what are you holding? And I was like, so it's these products that I'm trying to get to Blondish. And he was like, okay, leave it with me. I'll get you behind the DJ booth. So I was thinking, okay, he's probably never going to do that. Hour later, he comes up, he takes me behind the DJ booth. And at this point, she still had a gatekeeper there, you know, to stop anyone going behind. So I said, hi, I'm Rosie. I'm the founder of this company. I've heard she really likes functional mushrooms. We just want to give them to her to try. So she's like, oh my God, she loves female founders. Of course, like come through. And she was in the middle of her set doing a drop. So I'm standing there like such a nerf, my little box in hand. And then eventually I managed to hand her the box. And she again looks at me like I'm sort of handing her a bomb. And I think, okay, whatever, my job's done. Like at least it's like in her hands, but I assume nothing's going to come of it. And then the next day we woke up to her and she had posted on Instagram because she'd flown to Michigan to say, one of my friends just gave me Reishi and I slept really well. And then off the back of that, she then messaged us personally on the Instagram account to say, look, I have a residency across Pasha in Ibiza. Why don't you come and give this to all the top 17 DJs that we have? Because I think that they would like, you know, really appreciate it. And we were like, oh my God, yes. So then off the back of that, Brooke, who's our CMO, he then emailed or Instagram messaged a whole bunch of DJs, and then Camel Fat responded saying that they wanted it for their residency. But obviously at this point, we're like, oh my God, we don't have any stock. Like, what are we going to do? So then Liv, who's our CCO, she went all the way down to Manchester, hand-packed like 150 bottles into these boxes. Then we managed to sort of smuggle them into Ibiza in our suitcases. And even that, when it was coming out, we saw the conveyor belt stop. We were like, oh my God, this is it. This is done. Like, we're not going to get these products to these DJs. It eventually came through. We're like, okay, great. And then we went to go and meet Camel Fat's manager to kind of figure out how do we get the products to them. And it turned out he had a mushroom tattoo on his arm. So we were like, oh my God, this is our guy. And then it basically transpired then off the back of that, we managed to get a whole range of DJs on board who are then really loving the products, loving the clean energy. And it just transpired into so many sales and essentially like an incredible launch for us.
So you put bunny ears around smuggled. She didn't smuggle, guys. She just had to get a lot of products in. She's not in trouble. Everything's fine. Sometimes you just have to do the good old fashioned, put yourself out there and take some brave steps in order to get seen. And that's exactly what you did. But you knew your target market, which I think was key. Yeah. We're going to talk about the origin story a bit more later about your health and stuff. But I wondered if you could just talk about just a little bit, top headline that for us. How did it all start? How did you come to doing Super Room?
Yeah, well, it really started with the copper IUD, which I was given as a hormone-free form of birth control. Within 6 months, I just had the most insane symptoms where I got cystic acne all over my face, put on 10 kilos of weight, had tremors, anxiety, like severe depression. At the same time, working in a really high pressure job in finance. So eventually it just led to like complete mind and body burnout. But I'd gone back to the doctor good 6 times and every single time it was a new prescription. So it started off with Roaccutane for the cystic acne. Somehow I developed prediabetes despite being very fit. So then it was metformin for that. And then it was antidepressants, and then my thyroid function had dropped. So it was levothyroxine for that. And I just kind of looked at all these prescriptions and I was like, this just sounds like basically pharmaceutical dependency for life. And I was like, there must be a natural way that I can actually heal. And it sent me down a rabbit hole. I was essentially researching all the different types of things that I could use. And functional mushrooms was one of the things I landed on. So I started working with a functional health nutritionist at the time, and they were based in the US, and this is before functional mushrooms were ever a thing. So I was importing, and it was costing me something like £1,500 a month. But at this point, you're like, it doesn't matter. I don't want to put a price on my health. But it eventually led me to knowing like, oh, there must be some way that I can source this in the UK. And it just led me down a rabbit hole, basically figuring out where to source, what are the best products, and like how you should take it. Obviously, it didn't transpire into a business idea immediately, but it was off the back of sort of having a lot of other women also be like, wait a minute, I had the coil. What can I do? Help me, you know, kind of detox and things like that. But it eventually just led to me telling the message so many times. I was like, I think this is the message I need to get out to the world, that you can essentially use functional mushrooms in a multitude of different ways to kind of support your health across various mediums.
I'm glad that mushrooms help, but I'm sorry you had such adverse health reactions. That must have been very tiring and wearing at the time. And you feel like in the back dark, bottom of a pit, I suspect. My first really big question after all of that is, Roxy, with all of that in mind and your DJ story up front and your health story quickly following, do you consider yourself to be dangerous? And what does being dangerous mean to you?
It's tricky. I think I'm probably more self-deprecating than I am in the vein of being able to sort of think of myself in that way. I say I'm not traditionally dangerous, but I will put myself in dangerous situations if I can see that there is a wider purpose or something to get done. For me, being dangerous is all about being able to tackle things that make you terrified. So an example of this is I can get up and talk in front of people, but talking in front of people about like my products suddenly just felt like I was like naked. So you mentioned earlier on the introduction that I was on this sort of Dragon's Den style pitching event. And it's my first time pitching the product. It was into a room of 300 people. And I remember even before going on stage, being in the toilet, like scrolling over my notes and being like, oh my God, I've got to say all this in front of people. How am I going to remember it? Like so, so nervous. And then as I came on stage and then I was, as I was sort of pitching, the reception from the audience, and then by the time obviously I got the sort of 9 out of 10 investors, suddenly gave me that, oh wow, like the imposter syndrome kind of dropped and like, wait, I think this is actually going to be something. But it was like my first sort of validation. But again, throwing yourself into these dangerous situations in terms of what really terrifies you, I think is essentially what then helps you grow. And we've had so many of these moments now as the company is growing.
We talk a lot on the podcast about big D dangerous, which is kind of jumping out of planes or doing slightly crazy things. And there is a place for big D dangerous, absolutely. But also what you've talked about, I think, is that little D dangerous, although standing in front of a room of 300 people also feels big D, by the way. But that little D, which is, it's leaning into terrifying, isn't it? It's doing it because you know there's, it might be purposeful for what you need to do. And it sounds to me like it's at the heart of the business, which is exciting. And, you know, you're willing to take those steps to get this incredible narrative out there. And actually, I think in lots of ways, starting Super Room was sort of double danger, right? Because A, you're starting a new business in a fucked up world. There's no other way to say it, where things are crazy and changing and mad every day. And you stepped away from a successful career to do that. And also you moved away from traditional medicine into, I guess you wouldn't describe it as alternative because it's transformed your life, but what a lot of people would consider alternative therapies. So both involved taking a big leap forward. Did they feel dangerous to you at the time, starting Super Room and moving away from trad? Yeah,
the whole thing was dangerous. So I think I grew up with my mom, who's a single parent, and we came from social housing. So one of my biggest fears ever was not having money and kind of ending up in the same situation as my mom. So having that background in finance, having this cushy, you know, salary, and then you're sort of saying, oh, I'm going to defy all of that and even like move into startups to then, you know, moving into doing my own company was terrifying. And it has got to points where these risks that I've taken in order to learn essentially how to become a founder has led me to points where I've been like, I'm going to go bankrupt this month. What I've sort of always taken away from it is there's always something that happens, even if it's last minute, you just have to keep pushing and keep pushing through and something will materialize that just gets you to that next step and the next step. So it's often like trying not to get overwhelmed with the, you know, amount of things that can go wrong and just going, something will work out. Like something has to be on my side here. And it's been really tough tackling that, you know, massive fear around money and what will I do if it all goes. And actually losing it all was really helpful because then that fear now isn't there because you just know you're going to find a way one way or another. Basically getting down to the point where you run your finances down because you're taking all these risks, right? Like changing jobs, moving country, all the rest of it, and everything just sort of blows up. And then, but yeah, there was always a way that you will find that you can get, you know, to the next step.
And do you think your tough upbringing instilled some of those daredevil in you?
Yeah, for sure.
What's given you the strength to keep taking risks, I guess? Yeah.
It's largely to do with the hustle behind it. So even within my education, I always had to go off and actually learn by myself because we weren't given enough education at school. I had to do a lot of self-learning. I always had to figure out a path to figure out the skills that I needed in order to like get ahead, to get the good grades, etc., because I wasn't being given that at school. So I think that really instilled me to then be able to push forward and even become the founder I am now, because everything I did, I was like, okay, I had a bit of imposter syndrome, but I was like, never going to be good enough. And I don't really understand what, you know, being a CEO really means and why I can't be a CEO. But what it made me do though was learn about all the different elements that go into the business. And for example, financial modeling, do a course on financial modeling. I wanted to get an idea of how to run a company, go become chief of staff, then see when you basically are second to CEO, how the company's run from the inside that I could then, you know, lift as a blueprint into my company. And just kind of de-risk the process for myself through experience and through theoretical learning and then kind of draw it all together. And I really think without those experiences, as grueling as some of them have been, I wouldn't be in the position I am today to actually run the company.
Your health, let's just, because you did the research and you started to take functional mushrooms and move away from mainstream medicine. How quickly did you get better? How quickly did those symptoms that I listed in the upfront, which sound horrendous, pass?
It was 3 months of taking it every day. And at that point, my skin had cleared, the brain fog had lifted, my energy was back. And that's when I was just like, wow, like this does actually work. The problem though, that I started to see was that a lot of the products that were out there weren't really drilling down into what is very important to understand within a mushroom. So for example, with lion's mane or any mushroom, you take it for the individual bioactive compounds that are in them. So lion's mane has something called haristinones and irinosines, and that's what's responsible for increasing nerve growth factor in the brain so your brain can regenerate and, you know, helps with memory and focus. But a lot of companies don't actually drill down into that. So you can't understand, is this product actually going to do what it says on the tin, or is it just like 1,000 milligrams of dust? So it was a really deep dive into all the science to understand it, to go, people need a product that works with bioactive compound at levels that are actually effective as well.
I guess that's the genesis of Superroom, isn't it? To unlock all of those, which you've just talked. So how long from that moment did it take to get the business to where it is today?
It's taken 3 years. It's been a really,
3 months versus 3 years. Yeah, yeah. Well, not really long, but yes. Yeah.
It's so there's been so much in terms of like R&D that we were doing and testing, and also making sure that the brand got to where it needed to be. Within that time, obviously, I've needed to go back into work several times in order to make sure that I could, you know, fund myself and eat and live. So it's been really tough, sort of even with the hours. So, you know, I've only just recently left a stint in corporate again so I could support myself. So you're talking like 15 hour days every day. And I swear to God, I couldn't have done it if I wasn't taking these mushrooms, because they really do help with my energy and keeping me, you know, my immune system in check, etc. So it's just been a lot trying to get everything over the line and balance the time between the two. But as I say, we launched in June, finally at that point, and it is taking off. We actually sold out. And the amazing thing about that was we didn't actually do any paid marketing or anything. This is a product of doing stuff like Ibiza, going to different venues, like just trying to create the buzz. So we're only just about to switch marketing on now.
That must feel good, because there's a market there for it. You know that from what you've done already.
The reception has also been amazing. So as we were giving out products to people, obviously we know the product works, but you start to get a bit of fear because you're like, wait a minute, like we haven't heard anything back from people, not really getting any feedback. And it might have been like 2 to 4 weeks later where, you know, someone would then message and be like, oh my God, these products really work. I need to get more of them. Or I've given it to my dad, or I've given it to this. And suddenly then it became really overwhelming. It was sort of like all at once. And now that we sold out, it's been really interesting because we keep getting messages like, when are you back in stock? Like Adidas 5, we're like, whoa, okay. Well, this is great. At least there's demand. But I don't think we quite were able to see just how much this was going to take off. So yeah, it's kind of trying to come back down to earth a little bit and remain grounded.
And scale fast, I guess, as well. Scale production fast. Again, we had this horrible stat up front. You know, there's 2% of female-founded businesses get funding. You got 9 out of 10 investors in a room. But that, you know, you didn't just walk in and spiel off a story. A lot went into that, didn't it? So what did you do and how did you stand out? What did you prepare to stand out in that room?
So I'd actually, prior to that, done something which I would actually recommend for all female founders, which is the JP Morgan Founders Forward Perfect Pitch Program. And essentially what that was, it was helping to hone your pitching, but also helping to hone your deck as well. And again, I'm a first-time founder, so this isn't something that's familiar to me. I've seen a lot of decks and I've seen people pitch, but when you're doing it for yourself, it's a completely different thing. And I think one of the things you have to learn is that it's very much the story that goes into the deck. It took me a long time to want to tell my story because, again, it feels really vulnerable, and I'm not the kind of person that likes talking about myself a lot. And part of what was going into that was me being able to articulate the story to then, you know, then have people's sort of like emotional buy-ins. But I think if you're ever doing anything with a business and you are funding your company, have a story that is really worth telling and that gets the hook, because then people want to listen after. And that was definitely the feedback that I got from that day when I pitched. I had so many women come to me in the crowd and be like, oh my God, what you're doing is so important. Like, I've had similar symptoms. This is like, it's amazing to know that there's something out there that can help. So I think really it's just storytelling and making sure that you're doing it in a way that really engages people.
Yeah, but I'm interested in what you say about being vulnerable, because, you know, those symptoms that we listed at the top, you know, they're not unique to, some of them are unique to women, but they're very personal, aren't they? I always think women's health things feel very hard to talk about. Even acne. Nobody wants to talk about having acne. You know, you don't want to talk about any of it. How did you dig deep? Just, was the response enough to make you realize that was timing?
This is also interesting in that, so when you're explaining it to a male audience as well, that was always one of like my fears, because like you can get a bit of like a blank, you know, a blank, like, I don't understand.
Women's problems. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It was saying it, but then I think getting the feedback that made me go, you know what, this actually isn't about me anymore. This is actually about the wider mission of helping other people, which allowed me to step back and be comfortable saying it over and over again, because I was like, as long as I can take myself out of it and the wider mission is other people, I can do that fine. If it was all just about me, then I'm like, well, that doesn't sit very well with me. So I think when you look around, okay, how many people is this going to help by telling this story? Then I was like, Now I can tell it.
I've also just started a business in June, like you. It's interesting, isn't it? Because when I'm talking about, I find it very difficult to sell myself, which feels weird because I'm doing this podcast, but I don't enjoy saying what I'm good at or why I do things or my purpose. When I'm doing them for the business, it makes you one removed, doesn't it? Kind of, you're talking to the audience, not about yourself. So ideas. That is my trick for this. Try and put something between you and everybody else that is worth selling. Because selling yourself is tough. Tough.
Exactly.
Even if it's your own story.
Yeah, and even within that, there's also the same fear that I had when I was going to the doctors, and bearing in mind most of them are male, and they would always be like, oh, almost the equivalent of like, it's in your head, what's going on? And I'm like, look at me. That feeling of maybe people be like, oh, it's not true, that can't have happened. And like, but you know it. So it's that kind of feeling that you have to fight to order to be seen. And you know, that was also the fear as well, if people just be like dismissive, that can't have happened. Oh, it must have just been one of these things. So really just getting to grips with like, no, this, one, this happened. Two, this is the result. And three, I can actually help people. And again, as I say, the reception around it made me go, okay, this is not about me anymore. This is like the much wider mission.
Yeah, no, and I think you've touched on a huge issue there, which is women taking control of their own health. And I think that's what you're advocating for. Mushrooms is part of that story, isn't it? But there's all sorts of other things that go around it holistically.
I mean, another part of that as well was really me learning about my body and learning about my cycles. So I don't use any form of contraception. And I don't think there's anything bad with contraception, but I've obviously had so many negative experiences at this point. And I track my cycle, but prior to all of this going on, I didn't even know that that was possible, that you could track your cycle to understand your fertile window, to know then that you don't need to take contraception should you wish not to, right? It was always sort of drummed into me that, no, you have to take this because otherwise you will get pregnant. So again, it's that coming back to understanding your body, what's good for your body, how does your body respond, how do you work with it? And we're also doing a big piece at the moment, even around, you know, my cycle, how do I take the mushrooms? How does it help me through PMS, et cetera? So there's a lot to be done, a lot of education there, I think, for women to just understand their own bodies.
I think, and the other thing I love with what you're doing is I think that message is quite loud, or becoming loud. It's not loud enough, but it's becoming louder with women who are menopausal. So, you know, of a certain age, and we're, you know, and there's a lot of language around that targeted at Gen Xers, for want of a better word. I hate Gen, but you know, that sort of age group. You're advocating this from our whole lives. Women, you know, we should recognize who we are. We should think more widely. We should advocate for our own bodies. And it doesn't happen when things start changing. It should start as you're developing, I guess.
Exactly.
No, I think that's really exciting and powerful.
In terms of the product itself, anyone over the age of 18 upwards basically should be taking it. So, and it, because it has its relevance across all the different sort of demographics. Because if you're a student and you're burning out because you're, you know, studying so much, you need something to support your brain, this is going to help you. If you are a burnt out millennial professional and you're juggling family, kids, the million other things, this is going to help you with your energy, help you with your mood, etc. Again, later in life, so my grandmother has had Alzheimer's for the last 25 years, and my mom has been caring for her. And I've seen the toll that has taken, but like not too recently, my mom's memory was starting to slip. And that was obviously starting to become like a real concern for me. And I was like, right, you need to get on the lion's mane every day. He's been taking it every day for at least 6 months. It's been amazing because I've just seen her memory get so much better. So she isn't, because I'm so busy, I'm like, Mom, where did I put this? And she's like, Roxy, it's over there. It's over there. I'm like, wait, how are you remembering it? And it occurred to me the other day that, oh, wow, her memory has significantly improved. And she just went traveling around Italy on her own. And I would not have been comfortable with her doing that this time last year. And honestly, she handled everything completely on her own. She's never traveled on her own, never got like foreign public transport or anything. And I really do think a large part of that is the mushrooms. And she's also massively addicted to cordyceps because she's crazy. She's 70, but she does like 3 classes in the gym. And she's like, I need my cordyceps for my energy because like I can't do it without it. So I think it just shows that you can take it across all the different spectrums because it will just help in so many ways.
Yeah, amazing. The other thing I love about your story, Roxy, and how you tell it is it's one of hope. Like you've battled the odds. You're also digging deep. You know, you're making sacrifices to make this work. So it's not one of luck. It is one of hope. And I think in a world where, you know, we've talked about the politics are insane. There's war, you know, literally places are on fire as we're speaking. There's climate change, mental health, poverty, you know, everything is tough. Here you are starting a new business and it's defying expectations and maybe your own expectations. I wondered, do you think you've done anything differently or do you think you've just landed on something that is just so authentic?
I've been very overwhelmed with the reception and even some of the sort of partnership deals that we're doing now. Like, for example, we're going to be running retreats with Soho House, and we're having a lot of conversations with some of the big hotel groups because they want to do stuff that's different within their food and beverage and also room offerings and things like that. This isn't stuff that I had even considered for the business, right? We would just go after the D2C market. And I was seeing that all these other places want it because everyone has an audience, right? And this is so applicable across all different types of lifestyles that it's so much bigger than I even imagined, that it's actually somewhat overwhelming. So for us, it's remaining grounded and strategic about what we want to do. But also in terms of like when this started, I also was like, maybe this is just me. Maybe only I have like a good response to functional mushrooms. And then as we've been getting the feedback from people, one of the most interesting ones actually has been people with ADHD. I've got some friends that have been taking it and they were like, I need the lion's mane. Like, I really need the lion's mane. Something about it with people that are neurodivergent seems to put their brain on quiet and they just love it. So it's been great to see that reception, and I just didn't anticipate it was going to take off. Hence, I didn't anticipate we were going to sell out. So there's been a whole load of things that you have to do, even on the supply chain, et cetera, to try and make everything come together. But yeah, it's been overwhelming, but great.
And does this early success make you feel hopeful, or does it just still feel like a big mountain to climb?
It makes me feel really hopeful because we always wanted to get these signals. I just didn't think that they were going to happen so fast. Like, in my mind, I wasn't going to leave my sort of corporate contract until the end of the year. We were going to scale really slowly. Like, you know, this was all supposed to be like a lot later, but appetite for it has been so immense that it's accelerated everything. Like, Ibiza accelerated our European delivery. All these different things just ended up happening now. Again, as I say, you don't want to run before you can walk, but it also is forcing us to put into place the structures that you need in order for the company to scale. So we have a new saying, which is always like, the solution is in the problem, because pretty much everything goes wrong. Like, everything you can imagine goes wrong is wrong. So you're always like, okay, fine, but there's always something better on the outside of that. So always welcome it rather than, you know, try and push it away.
And how do you, well, yes, you said, I was about to say, how do you manage the overwhelm? But your functional mushrooms are helping you manage the overwhelm.
Yeah. So, I mean, I also was diagnosed with ADHD in January this year. And one of the big drivers of it was I was dropping into overwhelm all the time. I always knew I was kind of had tendencies of like an ADHD brain, but it used to work as my superpower because I could do a million things. Mm. I could also hyperfocus. And when you're in a corporate and structured environment, this is great. You just kind of execute and you just do it really well. All of a sudden, then moving more towards startups and having my own business, everything's chaos. Everything's all over the place. You don't know what to focus on next. And I would sometimes sit in overwhelm, like for hours, pretty much like staring at the wall, being like, my executive function's gone offline. And it was like a traffic jam in my brain of thoughts and going, I don't know what to do next. And then I would always say this with mushrooms or any supplement, it's not going to be like, you know, magic pill. You've actually got to also put the structures in place that are going to help you. So part of that, then I did some therapy around it, and I started figuring out the structures that could help me. And it sounds really simple, but even things just like writing a list of all the 1 million things I need to do and like just like ticking it off, these are all things that you have in your arsenal, which, you know, when I was really high functioning corporate, I would always do. But when you're in overwhelm, you just, for some reason, you don't know what to
stop
do. Exactly, because you're literally overwhelmed. So I would always say that it's always about adjusting your lifestyle to make sure you're living healthier. You've got the structures in place that will help you. And then you're layering on top with, you know, functional mushrooms to help you execute better. But essentially, if you don't actually fix some of the things that are in your lifestyle, it's not a magic bullet, right?
You should always look at everything in the round, shouldn't you? And that's basically what you're saying. But yeah, mushrooms are helping charge, or functional mushrooms are helping charge that. And do you have balance in your life, Roxy? Do you think, or is it 100% the business at the moment?
So actually, it's the last year has been very unbalanced and very mental. But one of my major outlets is ballet. So I've used to dance professionally when I was younger, and I only sort of recently went back to it. Term stopped actually a couple of months ago. And within this couple of months, I started to really notice that like my brain was not functioning, and I was going into sort of this overwhelm. And then I went back to ballet a couple of weeks ago, and literally after finishing class, my brain just went bang straight on. And I was like, wait, what is that? And I think you have to couple all this doing lots of stuff with something that almost puts your brain into a meditative state, right? Where you're offline, no one can reach you. You're focused, you're inwards in your body. You're thinking of all the things that your body needs to do. You have no thoughts that can interrupt because you're focused on the exercises that need to be done. And it's like a moving meditation for me. So I think it's really important to layer that in. And that essentially I've realized is an absolute non-negotiable for me now. I have to dance at least once a week, because otherwise that's when my brain starts, you know, Thing
on fire. Yeah. Or the opposite, whichever it might be. Yeah, no, we've talked about it several times. Actually, more recently in the recent podcast, people have been talking about outlets, whether they're mental or physical or sometimes both. I got made redundant earlier in this year. First thing I did is I've always wanted to do creative writing. So I joined a creative writing course. And it was so empowering just to do something that, so my mind wasn't empty, but it wasn't thinking about anything else other than the stories I was trying to tell or physical challenges. And I think that one is they help your brain. Two is they build resilience into you so that you know you can manage that. If I can churn out a story, which I never thought I could do, or if you can go back to dancing and it quiets your brain, then that you can sort of repeat, there's muscle memory in there, isn't there, that you can repeat when you're in the workplace. Yeah,
it really is. And like, I mean, I was very humbled going back to ballet because obviously my body doesn't do what it used to do when I was, you know, a teenager.
Ultra bendy. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, I had to go right back down to basics. But what's so nice about that as well is like you're moving up levels. So you feel like you're growing and you're achieving something within that. So even if everything else is going down the toilet when it comes to all the other things you think that you're failing at, there's still something that makes you feel like, oh, I'm learning, I'm getting better at something, you know? So I think that progression is also really, really helpful.
Throughout all these interviews, I'm building up this anatomy of a dangerous woman, and we've said, curiosity, tenacity. But one of them is this ability to have I don't want to call it a hobby, but an outlet where you're just you in that moment, and all your happier self. So it's really important. Roxy, what do you wish you could tell your younger self about the power of being dangerous? You've talked about a challenging childhood, maybe just in terms of money and things like that. Do you think you were brave in that situation? Did you start out brave?
Yeah, I've been it started out brave. I think you acquire almost the skill of being brave, because also life just throws things at you. As a child, again, this sort of growing up with my mum in a single household meant I actually became the man of the house. So I was doing things like mowing the lawn and putting up shelves and all the rest of it. So I already had this like, oh, I'll try anything to help and, you know, sort of be that kind of figure. Becoming dangerous is something that you acquire by going, oh, actually, every time I try something different and it works out, or I've learned something new, there's that sense of accomplishment. So you're like, okay, I'll throw myself into that again and I'll try that again. And I think that's something that stuck with me throughout.
And is there anything you wish you could go back and tell that Roxy who was mowing the lawn?
I think it's or even I'd say where I'd really go back is maybe in some of like my teenage years to just say to myself that like, one, you can slow down and, you know, go a lot more easy. And two, actually, sometimes taking more time rather than, so speed basically is not always your friend. Sometimes you actually have to slow down in order to get to that, you know, that final mark. And ultimately as well, like my self-criticism, I'm my harshest critic. So be kinder to yourself. Like I've really worked on my narrative for myself and trying to see things as wins and celebrate the small wins as well as the medium and big wins, because I'm very good at seeing what I haven't done as opposed to seeing all the things I have done. So I try to flip that round now and go, okay, what are the things I've actually achieved today as opposed to focusing on the 50 things I didn't achieve today?
You might say the small one was handing the box to Blondish with all the stuff that kicked off, but actually it was making the friend of whoever was managing the floor, right? So you've got to excel in each moment and learn from them, I guess.
And also just, you know, really take every opportunity that comes. You know, it's one of those things where if we didn't do that one small thing, none of these other things would have happened, right? So it's always this one tiny thing that was a bit scary and requires some grip, etc. But take every opportunity, like try, and it really doesn't matter if it fails or it doesn't go wrong, because ultimately, had I not tried to get behind that DJ booth to give her the box, because I would have felt, I don't know, awkward and embarrassed or whatever, we would never have had the blow up of Ibiza and all the other things that have happened after it.
I always tell my children, so my children are 18 and 21 now, so they're not babies, but I say it's not how we celebrate our successes, but how we manage our difficulties that we rise through life. And so it's that ability to pivot and keep moving forward and fucking get there in the end that's so important. I know. And it doesn't matter if the journey takes 5 starts sometimes. You might learn from each start, right?
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. We've learned at every corner. I've learned the painful way. There's also no shortcuts and there's no easy way. And one of my big things was, because having studied law and all the rest of it, I love to read and I'm very theoretical and I love to like dive into topics. But there was nothing better than just the day one starting of doing. that you can live in your head for ages. I was in analysis paralysis for ages of, you know, what do we do? But the moment you start doing, it's like you build up that tiny bit of momentum and then you just keep it going, do one tiny thing, one tiny thing, one tiny thing. And then eventually, you know, it builds up to a snowball.
It is in the graft, isn't it? It's in the idea and the narrative and the story and the moments, but it's in the hard graft as well that you keep moving forward. You've worked, Roxy, in some pretty male environments, I think, in the past. How did you manage these? And did you manage to stay true to yourself in those environments?
Sometimes it was tough, particularly, you know, this is all before the sort of hashtag Me Too moments. And I've definitely found myself in finance in some precarious situations. I think for me, I grew up as a bit of a tomboy. So for me to bring out that more masculine side was, it felt easier for me to kind of own some of these situations in, you know, meeting rooms, et cetera, because I could bring that out. But I would say that the main thing there was also realizing the power in the femininity. So I would always be able to go into these rooms, yes, have a bit of that masculine, but also bring in some of the more creative side of things, or a bit of the softer side, or the emotional intelligence, which sometimes in analytical environments isn't really there. And I'd say one of the things that got me furthest in my career was my ability to relate to people, make friends across the floor, and, you know, be able to get things done, because my role required so many touch points with different elements or different departments of the business. It really was about, like, win friends and influence people, right? The more people that are just, you created a relationship with them, the more happy they are to, like, bump your work up the schedule if someone else is being, you know, really negative. And I always had this saying, which was like, kill them with kindness. So no matter what was going on, no matter who was trying to scream at me in corporate or any of the things, which crazy things that would happen, I would always just remain calm and just be like, be as kind as possible. And eventually you end up getting the response back that you need. Because if you meet them fire, that's it. It's just catatonic.
Yeah. Explosive. Yeah. And do you believe in fail fast?
I really do. If you don't try, you don't know. And you've got to accept that things are going to go wrong. I actually now want things to go wrong, because everything that I realize that has gone wrong, there's always been something better on the other side of it. Like, so this time again, doing this next product run, every single element of the supply chain went horribly wrong. Mm. But off the back of that, we've now baked in a whole load of risk systems to make sure that these things don't happen again. We managed to reduce some of our unit costs down to a third by going out to, like, you know, other players in the market. So there's always something in it going wrong that puts you in a better position after. Even if at the time you're like, oh my God, I can't deal with this, it's another thing going wrong, there's always something better that comes out of it.
And do you think women are allowed to fail fast? Or is it harder for them?
I think actually what makes it harder for women is largely to do with the fact that we analyze ourselves so much compared to what men do. And this is just my opinion, but they always say, like, you know, have the confidence of the average white man, because it's true. Guys tend to have this, like, I can do anything. Oh, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, I'll run with that. Women tend to be a lot more like, well, I don't know, if I do that, then there's a consequence. And, you know, so it's having this sort of forward-looking motion, which is amazing, but which often can stop you from doing something, because you can analyze what will happen at the end of it rather than just the gumption of, I'm just going to get up and go and do it. So I would say it's just really important as women to go, it doesn't matter if we fail, because we will get through it anyway. There's always going to be a solution on the other side.
I mean, that's one of the raison d'etre of Dangerous Women. It's a network of women who can share failures and successes and pick each one another up. Do you have a network around you that supports you through moments like that? It's going to be plan B is often better, Roxy, don't stress about it, you know. Has that been purposefully built?
It really, especially with us, in terms of the culture of us in the company, like we've really started to celebrate it, because I've also been in many a corporate environment where everyone's too scared to say what's gone wrong, but it means then you can't change what is going wrong because you won't look at the process. So, you know, then it keeps going wrong, for example, and then you're still carrying the weight of the guilt. Oh God, I can't say anything, they're going to fire me. It's like, it's so much better to say, yeah, that I completely screwed that up and that went this way, because, okay, great, but what do we learn from it? And we've had this several times where we've, you know, again, doing stuff for the first time, you're going to drop the ball. So it's just really important that you go, right, okay. And also, but you boxed it into that, and it doesn't become the narrative of like, yeah, okay, well, then you did this and then you did this and then you did this. It's like, it's all a learning. Like, if you're repeating the same mistakes over and over again, that's different. But if you're doing something and you're like, you know, again, you just have to learn from it.
No, absolutely. And you are forging new ground with functional mushrooms. They, you know, you're taking them such a step forward to where mushroom is already, aren't you? So everything you're doing in some ways is a bit new, and you are taking a step into the void, even if that void is coming up to meet you with great opportunities.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even when you look at trying to explain to people how to take it or the science behind it, like a lot of the stuff like hasn't been done. And even in terms of our extraction process, etc., there's so much that is new that needs to be explained in a way that people can understand, and that also has to carry the weight so that people know what they're taking and that they can, you know, actually relate to it. So I think everything is new. But again, the amount of iterations that this company has gone through, yeah, I can't even count. You just look at everything, right? Okay, great. Learn from that, change it, learn from that, change it. I think that's the most important thing you have to have, is the flexible mindset, like, and not be so focused on like, we need to get to this outcome, which therefore means we didn't get there, so it's a failure. It's like, no, there's literally 1,000 detours before you get to what you essentially want as your end product.
Do you have a North Star for the business? That, because if you've got a really firm North Star, you can take 1,000 roads to get to it, can't you? But it, you're all moving in the same forwards all the time.
The North Star for us really is global expansion, but it's also making sure that people have the tools to proactively choose how they want to manage their health. And I, like, you know, if I can turn around and say that we've helped 1 million people combat various issues with their health by taking something that's natural, that doesn't have the side effects for a lot of the pharmaceuticals, it really improves their health. I feel like that's my job done. Particularly, I think about my own family history with, like, you know, my grandmother, Alzheimer's, my mom, etc. If you can, yeah, take, like, can prevent something happening in the future and it actually works, that fills me with so much feeling of just, my purpose is done.
In many ways, and in no way denigrating, that's a very simple North Star, isn't it? It's a very, it's sharp and it's simple. And that's when I think things like this really come to life, because you know exactly where you're going. There's one clear purpose, one mission. Yes, the science is complicated. Yeah, you know, how they work is complicated, but your mission is pure and good, which is probably what people are reacting to so nicely, yeah, as well.
And again, amazing, because they have so many use cases as well. It's just, as long as we're improving the quality of life, not just the lifespan of people, the job is done.
So I'm going to ask you a bit of advice on channeling dangerousness. And you're the, you know, you're, it's brilliant having you on, because you're at this really interesting, rapidly scaly part of your startup business. You know, there's lots of women out there at the moment of all ages who are looking to start their own businesses at the moment for a range of reasons, but largely because, you know, PLC corporates are sort of slightly broken and people are finding themselves in different situations. So I'd love to take, if it's okay, a deeper dive into why you started it, some of the technical things. I know there's other women who are, you know, as I've said, who are looking to take the world less traveled, to step away from the corporate world, or maybe never ever enter into it. I think Gen Z don't want to go into the corporate world in the same way. I think that, well, I'd only talk from my own children's point of view. So I think, what is your advice to women looking to do their own thing? How do they not be frightened of it?
Firstly, I think if you want to do your own thing, just having that thought alone is actually enough to propel you forward. So I was in my 20s when I knew I wanted my own business. I just didn't know exactly how that was going to materialize. And the moment I had that thought, the next step was, okay, well, then what do I need to learn in order to have my own business? A step outside of doing an MBA, because it's so expensive. There are so many resources that you can learn what it means to run a company, to what departments need to be there. And you do just have to put yourself through what I would call like your entrepreneur's education, because you can only have your own company if you understand how all the mechanisms interact with each other. So just be curious, like read all the books that you can on, you know, entrepreneurship, how to start the company, like what are the things you would be testing? What are the things that you want to learn? And then on top of that, if you can, and you have the opportunity, layer on top of it with experience. So you, like I did, becoming key staff, meaning then, yeah, I can get an insight under the hood of a startup. Again, trying to just de-risk it for myself, because I think as women, we're more risk averse, right? We don't particularly want to just dive in there and be like, okay, that's fine. So I think I've tried to de-risk it as much as I can through learning and experiential. And then you suddenly get that feeling of like, okay, I can move into this. And actually one of my biggest takeaways from doing something experiential was I suddenly then looked around at like people running these companies and I was like, wait a minute, if you can do it, then I can. And that was my big aha moment of like, oh, wow, all this sort of like, I need to learn more and I need to become this and this and this to promise you. It's like, no, if they can do it, you can do it. And the only thing you need to go and do now is actually just do the thing.
So that's really interesting. That involved a conscious moment of step back, of opening your eyes, of breathing in and going, okay, it's not all about theory. I can actually, if they can do it. I mean, that was a really conscious moment, it looks like. You had to take a step back, though. I think there's an interesting, I don't know, pinch point's the right word. And you've talked about this a few times. When you stop theorizing, when you stop thinking about how you're going to do it and you move into the activation, when you actually start to do it. And you said the doing has been incredible. But did you know the time was right? Or did you just go, okay, enough, Roxy, go forward?
Yeah, no, there was no such thing as knowing the time was right. I think that even is a right time. It was just this sudden, like, I need to do something now. And then you start realizing that nothing will materialize the more you sit in your head. So, and it was just like, it was one tiny step of, for example, starting to look into packaging. So like, what do you need to do for to package the product? Like, then you just start breaking it down step by step. And then as you start doing little by little, it leads to one thing more, and so on and so forth. And then kind of go.
So just go, take the leap is what you're saying.
Just take that first step, do the tiniest, smallest thing. Even if it's researching, how do I start a company on Companies House? Or how do I set up my accounts for the company? Whatever it might be, whatever your starting point is, just start doing something, because it will then lead you on to the next thing.
That's amazing. And how are you managing, so sort of the other side of that, now you're in it, how are you managing, and I think you've called it the chaos of this first phase of the business, and how are you holding on to all the strings and moving in the right direction? How do you manage the chaos?
It's been a lot of really writing down the list of what needs to get done, prioritizing exactly what I should focus on. And by the way, every week you start off thinking you're going to do something, and by the end of the week, nothing materializes of what you thought. You may just throw it out.
Oh my God, that is actually slightly killing me. It drives me slight. I'm a list person. So I know it's so weird, because I do, and I push back the things that are important but not urgent. So I need to recalibrate that for sure. Yeah.
Usually what I think drives people insane, because comparatively to corporate, where I could predict my day in, day out, I could not predict what goes on with this company. And it's part of that uncertainty that I think that kills you. But it's just, you know, every day just looking at what you need to do and then just trying to tick like two or three of those things off so that they actually move forward and drive it to completion. I think one of the things that you can get like very stuck in is, because you've got your hands in every single department. So then you touch this, and nothing moves. So just focus on getting at least one or two things done to completion every day, and then things actually start to make sense.
I hope my mentor, who's still my mentor, who was my boss when I first started work, is listening. She always said, your to-do list is too long. Or, you know, you just do it on the things, or the to-do list for the business is too long. We just need to get three of these things done, and then everyone will be happy. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Would you recommend making the leap directly into your own business, or do you think the corporate world is still a training ground?
Honestly, I have to really thank my corporate background. It taught me so much in terms of structure, firstly. Secondly, how to communicate with people at all different levels of the business. Part of the things that you'll do when you're running your own company is have to speak to so many multitudes of people. And if you haven't honed those communication skills, it can be really tough and also very overwhelming. So I think actually the corporate structure sets you up to know how to actually create structure from chaos. I think if you go straight into starting your own business, you're in chaos, and then you haven't learned how to actually like distill what needs to be done and what needs to move forward.
And what's your advice? This is my last one. Your advice for when the chips are down. For example, didn't you have your appendix out just as you were looking to launch? So that's a curveball. What did you do? That's chips way down. What did you do?
I had my appendix out, what was it? November last year. The NHS managed to mess up the operation, and I spent 6 weeks throwing up lung stock before having a second operation. So I was completely burnt out. How did I even get through that? Part of having your own company means that you know that there's this purpose that exists that you'd have to be insane to actually pursue. On the days where I feel like I just couldn't anymore, there's something that niggles you in the back of your mind that just pushes you forward. And I think it was also even within that, just going, there is no choice. This has to be done. So even if it's just one small thing a day, just get that done and push it forward.
And did you call on people to support you as well in that period? Was it at a weird stage? Are you bad at asking for help?
No. Actually, that whole event actually sent me to a bit of a breaking point. And then I had some therapy after it because it was such an overwhelming period. And it then sort of came to light that I'm horrendous at asking for help because I'm just used to just taking on everything. And I'm like, oh, I can do it, or I can do it, and I can do it. And it actually then opened up this can of worms that I realized I'm really bad at asking for help. So we now have something between my business partner and I where I've expressed to him, like, I'm not very good at asking for help. So there he's helping by saying, how can I help? What can I take off your plate? So we've sort of figured out that medium. And I've now got better at saying, right, I can't do this today. Like, I need someone to step in. But that felt so uncomfortable for me because, and again, but I've also realized if I don't ask for help, eventually it leads to this like burnout that happens because you're just taking on too much.
And at some point you won't be able to scale.
Brooke always says to me, like, we just need you to keep breathing. So like, you know, tell me what I can do to take it off your plate. So I've learned now.
I love that though.
Yeah. But
every
also
moment for you is a learnable moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, but it isn't, but there's also, I've started to realize the trigger feelings that I get. There's a certain flare up that I will feel when I'm starting to feel overwhelmed. And when I catch it at that point, obviously it's still manageable. And that's a signal to me now, I'm doing too much. What can I offload or what can I put to the back of the list for now and just focus on like these one or two things? Because I was terrible for doing 100 things at
everything.
Once. Because
yeah.
at times when I'm firing all cylinders, I can. And then again, me being my harshest critic is going, well, why can't I do all this? And I've learned to go, no, that's really unhealthy. Stop. You're feeling that way. So dial it back, push certain things aside that you can and just focus on, you know, what's immediate. And then that sort of helps manage it.
Amazing. I think that's great advice as well for everybody is listen to your body, listen to your gut when it's telling you, this, you know, I feel weird because it's your body going, stop, 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 or turn direction or whatever it is. Yeah.
And there's always a cue. I always feel the same like flare. So then, whereas before I'd feel the flare and I'd ignore it and obviously just starts getting louder and louder and louder. Whereas now I've gone, signal. Great. Time to take a step back. What do I need to reprioritize and move around? Just literally listen to your body.
And Feel the Flare is definitely the name of a new self-help book. So that's amazing. Yeah. Everybody, all dangerous women, most of us and non-dangerous women have a network of people around us that support us. So if you had to pick three people who you would consider your dangerous mentors, they could be male, female, real, not real, who might they be?
So in terms of mentors, it's an interesting one for me. It's less mentors, but I look to inspiring people to kind of bring that into my, you know, sort of like daily practice.
Yeah.
So for me, some of the people would be someone like Martha Stewart. So I saw her documentary recently on Netflix and I thought it was so inspiring. Someone can take what you do as a woman in the home, make an empire out of it, end up in jail for right or wrong reasons, but still come out the other side of it and actually like relaunch. And I think that's really important, right? Because you're not always going to be perfect. You will have times where you fall from grace or where you mess up in interviews or something, the wrong thing is said. And I think it's much more about how do you own that? How do you come back and how do you still keep going, right? Because you can't just stop and give up. And then I think someone else that I really sort of admire and sort of look up to as well is Reese Witherspoon, because she has this book club and she essentially has people like submit the ideas and they read it and they figure out then from that what they want to bring to screenplay. But she's so smart in that I think she takes some like 30% of the proceeds that comes out of that into, you know, the film that gets produced. So again, it's having that business mindset and the commercial acumen, but applying it to something within the arts. And I'm like, fascinating.
I mean, that's such a smart business model as well. She is just, as far as I can make out, nearly everybody seems to win in that process too. So it's smart.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And again, it's one of these things where, and I always say this, even with all the partners that we have within the business that we work with, like we want partnerships where we are better than the sum of our parts, right? Where together we know that we can build something incredible. And it's the same thing where there's just value on both sides, which I think is so important. And I think the final person I think is absolutely extraordinary is Emma Greedy. So she helped be she's one of the co-founders of Skims. And on top of that, she has that background where, you know, she came from nothing. She's really hustled and now she's absolutely killing it. And I think any of that sort of underdog, strong female, I find, you know, really inspiring. And even when it comes to books, one of my guilty pleasures is I love fantasy, but usually with a strong female lead where, you know, they've come through some sort of adversity. Like I was reading Fourth Wing, which is part of this whole dragon series.
Daughter's reading that at the moment. She's obsessed.
I love it. And so the main character within that, like, you know, she's supposed to be this, you know, scrawny girl that doesn't have anything behind her. And she ends up being obviously incredibly powerful, but there's so much grit within her of like training and learning and, you know, and then her brain is someone that's a really intellectual. So I really relate to the character. But again, it's that sort of feeling that like, doesn't matter how small you are, etc. If you basically hone your skills and you work hard, there's always some sort of fierce danger within you that you can use in order to get ahead.
Amazing. I love that. Thank you so much. And our first book character, so amazing. Roxy, how do listeners find out a bit more about you? Where's the best place to find about Roxy and Super Room? And wait for you to have scaled your products again.
Yeah, so I mean, it's box landing back in the shop on Monday. Thank God.
Oh, hooray. Hooray.
So the website is www.superroom.life. That has actually a bit about my story as well within the website. So we're on that. And then for me, mostly it's really on LinkedIn. I have some work to do in terms of like building up my profile. But again, it took me 2 years to agree to actually be on camera for the company as well. So because it's something I'm actually quite, believe it or not, camera shy. So I've had to build up some resilience to that. But there'll be a lot of videos coming out around the product and how it works and more about me that will be sort of all over our social page as well, and superroom.life on Instagram.
What an interview. So interesting. I just love the sort of juxtaposition, as I've said at the beginning, your ability to tell such a cogent and interesting narrative, your openness to being vulnerable to help what is the fire inside you come to life. This whole piece around functional mushrooms I think is brilliant. So much to learn from today. Thank you, Roxy, so much for agreeing to take part.
Thank you, Sophie. It's been a pleasure.
What an episode. Honestly, I feel so lucky to have had Roxy on at this part of her business's development and her own trajectory. I suspect in a year or two's time, we may not have been quite so lucky. She would have been, quite frankly, too busy. Please like, share, subscribe, tell people about our wonderful podcast. We love that you are listening. It means the world to us, and we hope you continue to do so. Meanwhile, can't wait to drop the next one in a couple of weeks. Stay dangerous and welcome back here to Series 4.